Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The FBI has recently shared with us a specific threat to our subway system. Commissioner Kelly and FBI Assistant Director Mark Mershon will go into more detail. But I wanted to assure New Yorkers that we have done and will continue to do everything we can to protect the city.
Mayor Bloomberg, from his original announcement on Thursday night of the subway security alert, now, as you heard in the news, being scaled back. And let's look at the subway threat announcement in national context. Last Thursday was really a remarkable day. On Thursday morning, the White House announced that President Bush would make a major speech with new specifics about the war on terror. And with that advanced billing, we carried the speech live on this program. In fact, the president avoided saying anything specific about the dilemmas facing us in Iraq, but did claim 10 terrorist plots had been thwarted by Iraq intelligence. Then later, just an hour before the mayor's no-show at the Apollo Theater debate, we're told that battlefield intelligence in Iraq has yielded a specific but uncorroborated threat. A short time later, the Homeland Security Department says the threat is of dubious credibility. Is this typical of the kind of intelligence coup that Americans are dying for in Fallujah? Today, we're told the subway threat is winding down. So what was it all about? And does the right hand know what the left hand is doing on Homeland Security even now? We'll debrief the subway security threat and talk about Freddie Ferrer's cautious response to it. Also about Ferrer's almost complete inability to raise money since primary day, with Guy Martin, security columnist with New York Magazine and with Condé Nast Traveler, and Village Voice columnist Wayne Barrett. Welcome back, both of you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Guy, question number one, lifted right from the introduction. Is this apparently false subway threat typical of the kind of intelligence coup that Americans are dying for in Iraq?
It is a let me put it a different way. When you're an oysterman, you have to dredge up a lot of silt from the bottom to find the oysters. And I think, yes, it is typical, and yes, it is probably sludge. But unless you are dredging, you are never going to find an oyster at all.
That's like kissing a lot of frogs to find your prince.
Correct.
In the dating world.
You got to kiss everybody. They had no choice. They had to call the alert.
You think they had to call the alert?
Absolutely.
How come?
They have an entire apparatus that it's not, okay, let me put it a different way. It's not causal. The apparatus is not why they had to call the alert. The fact that New York City, Los Angeles, and a handful of other major metropolitan areas in the States have been listed consistently for years as targets by Al-Qaeda Central and by Al-Qaeda splinter groups on websites, in missives, in edicts, in huge, enormous fatwas lasting and overlapping, is the reason they had to do it.
Before we get to Wayne, question number two, Guy, how should we feel about the FBI announcing this threat and the Homeland Security Department poo-pooing it? Is this good because they felt free to publicly disagree, or bad because they're still not talking to each other even after the whole federal government has been reorganized under Homeland Security czar?
I think the FBI is, and this is my pure opinion after I guess I'm just sort of an FBI watcher, so I think the FBI has to do what it has to do. The Department of Homeland Security is still kind of new in its traces, even though Chertoff is a slightly more reasonable, less, say, hysterical guy than former Secretary Ridge.
Now there's high praise. More reasonable, less hysterical. Go ahead.
Well, he is. He's a more risk assessment based sort of brainier guy. Ridge was a cheerleader necessary to get the thing off the ground. Chertoff has, I think, we've noticed certainly in the last few weeks since Katrina hit, many problems, and I believe that he's a more reasonable, more tempered man.
Okay, but back to the point. The FBI was on one page, the Homeland Security Department was on another.
It's a huge federal bureaucracy. They've each got little bitty shards of the picture. Department of Homeland Security is supposed to be reading that mosaic, and they just simply came up with another opinion. I don't think it's unhealthy. I think it's probably a little jerky and herky-jerky from the outside, but I'm not sure that it's entirely unhealthy. It has to be a debate.
Is that herky-jerky or is that jerky?
Both.
Okay. Wayne Barrett, have an opinion about this? Jerky or herky-jerky?
Well, you know, Brian, the way I read John Miller's quotes, the famous John Miller, who we all know well, who used to wear a New York NYPD hat, is now the spokesman for the FBI, and his quotes in this morning's Times.
The same John Miller who used to be the police reporter on Channel 4?
Yes, yes. And he is now the spokesman for the FBI.
Yes.
And I certainly think knows the New York scene and is very credible on it. He, I think, is saying that the FBI did not. If you really read between the lines of his quotes, he's saying the FBI had nothing to do with the announcement.
Well, wait, the FBI participated
right,
in the announcement.
Right, but what he says is, we pass along threat information to the city. We had what we thought was threat information that had to be passed on to the city. And then he says very clearly, when the local government makes the decision to announce it, we think that that's appropriate. But it's clear that it was the local government's decision, if you read Miller's quotes, that made the decision to announce it, not the FBI.
Right.
Of the FBI at the press conference is just confirmation that they received the threat information and passed it along. I don't think it means that they thought it should have been announced at that moment.
So
at the same time,
even
I'm
though
not
they...
saying it shouldn't have been announced
right.
at that moment. I certainly think that you have to err on the side of caution. And Ray Kelly is a very proactive police commissioner, not just on questions of terrorism, but on questions of street crime. And I think he just did the most proactive thing he could do. I cannot imagine that the mayor held this press conference, made this announcement without doing it on the recommendation of Ray Kelly, and I cannot imagine that Ray Kelly made that recommendation without feeling that it was justified on the basis of threat information that he probably regarded as suspect when he made the recommendation. Huh. If you have some threat information, what do you lose by taking the action that the city took? You lose a few million dollars in overtime.
Well, you did add to me a little bit more to the mystique of this whole thing, which is the piece of the FBI actually having a spokesman there to just kind of provide a receipt of information received by the city, not speaking because they thought they needed to speak. But Wayne, this kind of plays into what I call the grand unified theory of the subway announcement, that the mayor, the FBI, and the Homeland Security Department have all managed to agree upon now, which is that the mayor, pretty much as you said, the mayor of a threatened city would reasonably be expected to tell his people of any threat, even if the Homeland Security Department reasonably considers it not credible. Does that sound reasonable to you?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't take the Homeland Security Department seriously about a hurricane, much less a terrorist threat. You know, I think... you know, to me, Freddie Ferrer would have done precisely the same thing. Mike Bloomberg would have done precisely the same thing if there were no debate the same night. You know, there could have been adjustments in terms mm-hmm. of time. I think the mayor could have been a little clearer and the police commissioner could have been a little clearer at that announcement about the dubious nature of the threat, and you do get concerned about crying, you know, fire in a crowded theater. How many times if people then discover after they panic, after people are concerned, everybody's checking with their loved ones, are they on the train, are they not on the train? And, you know, too many times, too many reoccurrences of this, take it out of the political realm, just put it in the governmental realm.
Mm-hmm.
Take it out and just say, is that good government to do this every time we have a questionable threat?
Village Voice columnist Wayne Barrett, New York Magazine security columnist and Condé Nast Traveler security columnist Guy Martin, my guest on WNYC. We can take your phone calls at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Guy, any reaction to where Ray Kelly comes into this? How much did he drive this train? And what are his relations like with Washington?
Well, I mean, you know that he used to be customs commissioner down there in the Clinton administration.
Right.
Commissioner Kelly, first of all, he's got a lot of Washington contacts. Let me jump back a little bit to something that Wayne said I found very, very smart. John Miller's appearance at the press conference is, yes, it's a receipt. But John also, I mean, I think we've mentioned his credentials. He's basically a New Yorker. So
right, it was Mershon at the
yeah, Miller makes the comments this morning. Yeah,
right. No, I just mean that if he's steering the public face of the FBI,
he's got cred.
He's a New Yorker that's doing it. That's a good thing. Right.
By the way, are we doubly lucky that Bernard Kerik didn't become Homeland Security chief because Kelly and Kerik were competitive with each other?
The luckiest man in the world is Rudy Giuliani that Bernie Kerik did not become Homeland Security chief.
Why do you say that?
He would have been looking for a shack-up apartment in the French Quarter during the hurricane.
That's right, and I'm sitting in the French Quarter. You're absolutely correct.
Let's look at Freddie Ferrer's evolving response to this on the campaign trail. At the Apollo debate, and full disclosure yet again, WNYC was one of the sponsors and I was one of the questioners. I asked the question that gave Freddie Ferrer the chance to criticize at least the timing of the threat announcement, you know, 75 minutes before the no-show at the debate, and he declined to take the bait. Listen.
The obligation of our police department is to protect every one of us. And if our police department is received information of a credible threat to our safety and security, it has an obligation to protect us.
But by yesterday, on the trail with Howard Dean in Union Square, Ferrer was a little more critical, but still cautious.
This is the moment, I think, for all of us to understand, one, that no threat against residents of this city should ever be treated lightly, and two, now that we've, as I understand it, gone off high alert, it's the job of the mayor and the police commissioner to tell us exactly what led them to sound the alarm.
So kind of taking both sides, saying no threat should be treated lightly, but now that we're off alert, the mayor should tell us more about what led them to sound the alarm. What do you make of Ferrer's responses, Wayne?
Well, we all know that Mike Bloomberg did not show up at that debate because he was afraid of facing you, Brian.
That was it. I make him quake, like
but,
you.
You know, I think Freddie... I think Freddie has sounded the right tone on this. I think he sounded at the debate, and I think now in the post-alert environment to say that we ought to know all the facts when there's... Ordinarily, you wouldn't say that, but when there is this kind of suspicion about the timing of the action, when the Homeland Security Department has raised the questions that they've raised, and when now, as the Post reports this morning, you know, the snitch... admitted, apparently, according to sources, that he made up and fabricated the entire threat story, then, you know, it must have been, there was a cloud hanging over this threat from the beginning. I think it is perfectly responsible that Freddie demand that the mayor and the police commissioner detail everything that they knew and lay out the case for us as to why this action was taken.
Now, I've gone on record saying I don't think this was done because, you know, the mayor was getting bad press around the Apollo debate. I don't think he would do that. But, Wayne, do you have any suspicions along those lines?
If he was 5 points behind, I'd be suspicious. But he's 15 points ahead in every public poll. It's unimaginable that you would take a risk like that. And it's completely inconsistent with the character of the mayor and completely inconsistent with the character of the police commissioner.
We will take a short break, and then we will continue with Wayne Barrett and Guy Martin. Will take some of your phone calls, and we'll go on to what is arguably the biggest news in the New York City mayoral campaign in the last week, not the debate at the Apollo, not the subway security issue, but the release of the latest campaign finance numbers on Friday. And just a hint, if you haven't heard these yet, we knew Freddie Ferrer was the candidate of the poor, but now we know why. Stay with us, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Guy Martin, security columnist with New York Magazine and Condé Nast Traveler and Village Voice columnist, Wayne Barrett, and you at 212-433-WNYC, and Wendy in Jersey City are on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian and everyone. It was you last week who had mentioned a news agency that had been asked to sit on this information, and it was the threat was supposedly specific to Sunday. Certain parties knew about it for a week, and they sat on it until Thursday, probably already knowing even more and more that the the threat was dubious. It just sounds very suspicious, you know, like as if it were used for other purposes. And the gentleman defending the character of the mayor and the police commissioner, I mean, should reexamine his statement. I watched the arrests on Day Street during the Republican convention, and I wouldn't pass put this past these two gentlemen.
And Wayne Barrett, you've been very critical of the arrests and the way the police department handled that during the Republican convention.
Yeah, these are very separable issues. Whether or not Ray Kelly and the police department handled the protests at the RNC has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not he would panic a city with a phony threat for political reasons.
And what about the journalism question? The Channel 4 had that apparently for 2 days, which would have meant Tuesday, and sat on it at the request of some level of government so that the investigation could continue. Think that's reasonable under the circumstances? Would you do that?
They were trying to make arrests in Iraq, and that was the rationale for it. Would I do it? I don't know. When I'm in those circumstances, I'll decide, but I certainly wouldn't criticize WNBC for doing it. They were told that sit on the information for a little while so that the people who had been identified by the snitch could be apprehended.
And Guy Martin, one thing I found a little strange about the timing of the announcement was that once they decided to release it on Thursday, they did it toward the end of rush hour, a little before 6 o'clock. If they wanted people to be extra vigilant on the subways, why didn't they announce it at 3 o'clock before the evening rush when everybody was going to be taking the subways?
I think that's a perfectly legitimate tactical question, Brian. But I would like to add quickly that they still had no choice. I think the delay and the request from whichever level of government it came from in the city probably is the result of this consideration. They don't want to give anybody, if it's real, which the assumption is, even no matter how much they doubt it, they have to act as if, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to give anybody 24 to 48 hours to be able to shift their game plan. They want, as if the intelligence says Sunday or Friday, or you want as short a time span in your public announcement before it as possible. And I think that we could argue, announce the Macy's Christmas sale, shortly after Columbus Day. Or something like that, but I really believe that those time spans were kept purposefully short. I don't think that they were kept purposefully short for Machiavellian reasons.
Brian, could I just throw in here that I think the real question that ought to be put at the mayor's footsteps on this, or on the mayor's plate at least, and it's raised partially by Juan Gonzalez in today's New York Daily News,
mm-hmm.
is why is it that the mayor, who has four members on the MTA board, he clearly does not control the MTA, but he can influence policy, he can critique policy. Now, why is it that the mayor has not been held accountable for the complete failure on the part of the MTA to prepare for this and any other terrorist threat? They spent years unable to spend $600 million in federal funds for Homeland Security. They have done everything that is counter to solid terrorist thinking, including closing down booths at stations, including putting up these exits that make it much more difficult to evacuate a subway. And the mayor has to be held accountable for what I think is bad policy. It's not policy that originates with him, but it's policy that he has participated in, and that he has not been sufficiently critical of the MTA's failure to do what it should have done over the course of years since 9/11.
Patrick in Fort Lee, you're on WNYC.
Yes, how you doing? I'm listening to your debate, and when this thing happened, I was down in Florida, and I was watching the news from earlier when George Bush was making his speech, and I was curious about what he had to say.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple hours later, and I heard this thing in New York, and to me, it was kind of astonishing. I was like, Michael Bloomberg, Republican, right, George Bush, right now he's swimming upriver without a pulling paddle in the polls. And I see these guys right now discussing about, these people's integrity. I think what they fail to realize is they're all politicians. And what was astonishing to me, it's like, okay, how did they find out about this? It was not, no, the regular chat on the lines or anything, specifically in Iraq. So right now, Al-Qaeda in Iraq is fighting in Iraq, and they're also strategizing and planning attacks in America from Iraq. How convenient. If you believe that, I got a nice bridge I want to sell.
Well, Patrick, thank you for your call. And Guy Martin, what about the connection between the two things? It was Thursday morning that President Bush gave his what was really a kind of prosecutor's indictment of the whole enterprise of Al-Qaeda. Not that Americans didn't already think Al-Qaeda was evil, but did say that they had busted up 10 potential terrorist attacks based on battlefield intelligence. And, you know, again, if this is the kind of thing that they had in mind, what does it say about the kind of battlefield intelligence that he was referring to generally?
Well, I mean, you know, people lie. Guys that get under interrogation in Iraq are under interrogation in Iraq in extremely, let's say, extreme circumstances. So I don't mean to raise the evil specter of Abu Ghraib, but I think actually the army is erring the other way now. But if you are in a battlefield and you are captured and you are in interrogation, you're not in a comfortable place. If you want to disrupt, there is a way to, with disinformation, disrupt the behavior of the American Army and the connection to our intelligence agencies, and through the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI, then the connection to the intelligence apparatuses of our targets, our huge metropolitan areas that are targets. You can start a false fire that way. It's totally conceivable.
And I don't want to just accept Patrick's statement without comment that you can impugn the integrity of people just because they're politicians. There are politicians.
And politicians that are even, let's say, not the most sincere or devoted sort, still do eventually have to act. This is about an act, right? They did move on this.
But what makes Thursday so unusual is that you get the statements of President Bush in the morning with respect to terrorism plots allegedly thwarted as the result of our good work in Iraq, with later in the day Mayor Bloomberg talking about this terrorist threat coming from information in Iraq. I mean, there have been other reports of, you know, how much of a stretch it was for the president to say 10 attacks have been thwarted because they referred to things that weren't even really plans or quite plans to make plans. And you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but to get the president with a certain track record of credibility on things like this, and all of a sudden Mayor Bloomberg, you know, it's rubbing off on Mayor Bloomberg.
Everybody in the world is worried about the exportation of tactics and or personnel from Iraq now. Iraq is a terror laboratory. So everybody's worried about that. Okay.
One person doesn't seem to be worried about it, and that's Mike Bloomberg. He won't even take a position on this laboratory, whether or not the laboratory
Kelly
should
does all
remain
the time.
Open.
Wayne, I'm sorry to disagree. Kelly, they have created an entire, as you know.
No, I'm talking about that he will not take a position on the war itself. He says it's a foreign policy matter, and yet this war is generating people who will attack his city. Not only is it draining away the resources that he could use to make this city safer and the country safer.
I'm sorry, I'm just saying.
I think the great irony of this threat is that it's an Iraq-based threat, and the mayor constantly refuses to say anything about the war in Iraq because it's irrelevant to what a mayor is supposed to do.
Although
it couldn't be more relevant.
The supporters of the president on that would say, look, Al-Qaeda attacked on 9/11 before there was a war in Iraq, so they are targeting New York. They were targeting New York, regardless of war or no war in Baghdad.
Correct.
No, but
Wayne's point is really good. I tell you one thing he's doing, Wayne, and that's putting his money where his mouth is. We have hundreds of counterterror officers and anti-insurgency specialists that we pay out of our budget every year.
I totally agree with you about that. I think that the city's done a good job of trying to heighten its defenses. I'm not saying that. I'm saying the mayor refuses to acknowledge a primary source of the threat to his own city, namely the one you just described, this laboratory for predators who will attack his city, he refuses to take a position on that war. And I find that to be inexcusable, the fact that he calls it a foreign policy matter and refuses to deal with this when our sons and daughters are dying there, when it's draining away the resources that could be used to protect our city, and when it's even producing threats to our city.
Right, right. Yeah, well, I mean, that's undeniable, actually. That's actually also why both guys had to act, because, I mean, last week.
Bloomberg and Kelly.
Yes, that's why they had to act. They know it. I mean, we're now spending hundreds of millions on this, just within the city alone. And, in fact, we're spending hundreds of millions on it within the city alone because we don't trust the feds that much. I mean, the feds have a kind of an overall oyster dredging responsibility for bits and shards of intelligence. But we look for, or more precisely, Bloomberg's and Kelly's guys look for, shards that pertain directly to New York, which may take, in the vast federal new federal bureaucracy, may take longer to filter down to the city than formerly. So with his apparatus, he's really just kind of combing the stuff that they dredge up from the bottom with a New York specific comb.
Uh-oh, guys, back to the sludge dredging theory of Homeland Security. This is 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC and WNYC.org. My guests are Village Voice columnist Wayne Barrett and Guy Martin, security columnist with New York Magazine and Condé Nast Traveler. And Wayne, since primary day on September 13th, Freddie Ferrer has raised a meager $232,000. He has less than $1 million on hand, not counting whatever Howard Dean helped him raise at a dinner in the city last night. Mayor Bloomberg, by contrast, reports in these campaign finance filings on Friday, spending $47 million so far this year and seems to be on pace to spend another $47 million. And then again, maybe the spending is slowing down. I thought I saw some TV programming last night somewhere between the Bloomberg ads. But Wayne, how bad is it for Freddie Ferrer?
Well, it sounds like he's running for city council, $220,000.
My goodness.
It's paltry. It's pathetic. And, you know, the mayor is obscene. I think the central quote that we ought to repeat in the news business every day, everybody who's trying to fairly cover this campaign, is that the mayor said after he won last time, if I have to spend $74 million the next time, I'll have a big problem. And I just think it's obscene that he's doing this. He had a rationale the first time, namely he was an unknown running against pros in a Democratic town. But to do this is, you know, and not only that, I certainly think that the campaign actively and that the mayor actively discourage those Democrats, prominent Democrats, wealthy Democrats, from contributing to the Ferrer campaign. They discourage it implicitly, at least, by everyone understanding that the mayor is acutely aware of who's giving to Freddie and who's, you know, he regards that as someone identifying with his opposition.
And I guess it's especially salient in the real estate and development communities where they need city approval for so many of the things that they do. The Times today publishes kind of a who's who of real estate donors to Ferrer in the 2001 campaign who are keeping their wallets closed this year, including Larry Silverstein, Douglas Durst, the Dolans, who own Madison Square Garden and Cablevision, even Daniel Doktoroff, who went on to become Bloomberg's deputy mayor for Westside Stadiums, gave Ferrer $2,000 in 2001. So I guess Doktoroff gets a pass. But where did all the other donors go?
Brian, can I interject? I just really, Wayne is so smart on these things. I'd really like to just pose the question. How soon is it, or how long do we have to wait until Bloomberg just kind of gives up and becomes a Democrat?
Not too long. You know, he does have, you know, he has dealt with the Bush administration in a kind of very, very low-key way, which, of course, he justifies on the basis of the fact that that produces aid to the city. I think there's reasonable questions about whether or not it ever has. So he keeps his paths to the Republicans still working. But, you know, the fact is that you could not, if you were to go down to City Hall, you could not find a Republican in City Hall working for him. I mean, somebody who's seriously involved. I don't even know if you could find a registered one at City Hall.
Right. Well,
and
see, that's
Tom Agnabeni, running against him, pointed out that he had yet to appoint a single Republican to a judgeship, and he's appointed over 100 judges. So, you know, his identification with the Republican Party is, you know, paper thin. I find it so ironic that they have managed to convince the tabloids, at least, that Freddie Ferrer is a flip-flopper when Mike Bloomberg changed his registration to run for mayor because he couldn't win as a Democrat.
That's called pragmatism.
But Wayne, let me ask. I mean, that's the reason I'm suggesting that some of the donors, the famous donors that Brian so adroitly listed, are maybe not showing up for Freddie.
Well, I think it's not only because the mayor is a closet Democrat, but it's also because the mayor has a very good record. This is a...
Right. Well, the real estate developers don't care what his position on abortion or gay marriage are. You know, they just...
you're absolutely right, Brian. And one of the great advantages of this mayor spending all of his money, he constantly tells us, is that means nobody can get to him. Because he is never going to do any of those quid pro quo deals. If you give to me, you get from me.
But is there
a reverse of that? That if you don't give to my opponent,
right,
I'll look on you with a different kind of eye.
And so we're going to run out of time here in a minute, but what about the dilemma for Hillary Clinton? Apparently, Clinton and John Kerry are going to have fundraisers with Ferrer here before the election. It's getting a little late, but is she in a tricky position at all with her relationship with the mayor and her reelection and presidential aspirations?
She's in a very tricky position, but she's doing the dance pretty capably. I think I don't think anybody can really get too angry with her. I looked at the fact that she did not show up at the Puerto Rican Day Parade this year. It was the first time she ever missed it, and she usually marches with Freddie and even does the salsa with him, but she failed to show up at this year's Puerto Rican Day Parade, and I thought it was a sign of something. So after 2 or 3 weeks of dealing with Hillary's press office to try to finally get an explanation, I actually discovered and confirmed with other people that she was at a family wedding. Huh. So it was no sign of something.
So wait, Wayne, one quick addendum. We have 20 seconds. Scalia was the Grand Marshal of the Columbus Day Parade yesterday. Is that because the Knights of Columbus are a right-wing organization?
Well, you remember that he even Mario Cuomo endorsed him Italian to Italian when he was up to the Supreme Court. So,
was Cuomo ever the Grand Marshal or some political liberal? Do you know?
You know, I don't know. I haven't tracked the history of that parade.
Right.
I'm just still relieved that Hillary might have stopped doing the salsa on the Puerto Rican Day Parade.
It's time to go now. Guy Martin, terrorism columnist with New York Magazine and Condé Nast Traveler, Village Voice columnist Wayne Barrett. Thank you both.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.